We're going to start off today, though, right here with a live interview. We're going to look at the situation of injured workers, both here in Hamilton and across Ontario. I've got with me Carl Crever. Carl is with the Hamilton District Injured Workers Group. Welcome, Carl.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you for having me.
Well, and thank you for coming. This is an issue I think deserves more attention. People like me that are fortunate not to have suffered a workplace injury, we tend not to be as well informed of this issue as we should. So, Carl, maybe we can begin with... maybe you could tell us what the Hamilton District Injured Workers Group does.
My pleasure. We were founded back in around 1989. Many people may recall there were some major pieces of legislation that were coming down in the form of Bill 162. And when I say major is because in 1985, all three parties acknowledged the fact that not having a cost of living allowance on workers' benefits was not fair, introduced legislation so that everyone got full cost of living on their benefits. However, what came down in 1990 was a bit of a different story, and it was a first step that we've seen a downward trend as to what was happening with the benefits that were being paid out. Prior to 1990, if you had a permanent impairment, you got a pension. It was a pension for life. After 1990, with the introduction of the legislation, they eliminated the pension for life and introduced what they called a dual award system. And that meant your non-economic loss and future loss of earnings losses. And it's all calculated up to age 65. And, you know, it was a silly question to ask them, but we said, well, what happens after age 65 if you have a permanent impairment? If you've lost an arm, is it supposed to grow back? But this was primarily the downward trend, the first step going backwards.
Right. Okay. Well, Carl... You know, I'm a worker and I've been injured on the job. What happens? You know, like say I've broken an arm or something on the job. What should happen at that point? What does the worker have to do? What does the employer have to do? And what help can the worker get?
Well, once you've had an injury, you should report it immediately. Seek medical attention. In that process, you have a claim that's filed. That's the normal process of what happens. The board will notify you. They've gotten your claim, and you'll either allow it or question it or whatever the case may be. But it's important that any injury that you sustain, report it, even if it doesn't require lost time. It may be a cut in the finger. Because, 5 years, if you don't report it 5 years down the road or a year down the road, you may get that infected, and you may even lose. And there have been cases where people did have that. The infection led to the amputation of a part of their finger. So I would encourage anyone, you have an accident, you report it, make sure that your employer files the claim or files the documents of an accident.
Right. Now, if your employer, what if your employer, your supervisor says, oh, no, don't bother with that?
Well, actually, that's against the law. It's against what the legislation calls for. But, Doug, that's not uncommon. We hear that constantly, all the time, with migrant workers, even young workers who are not aware of what their rights are, where they will take advantage of workers. And they will harass them or put the fear of God in them and say, if you file a claim, you could be out the door. That's what's happening in the workplaces today.
Yeah. So, you file a claim can you sort of run through what happens then? You know, you've got your injury. You probably aren't able to work because of your injury. So what happens to the claim that you make?
Well, once you put the claim in, you're going to have to back it up with medical evidence. So you've gone to a doctor, well, you've had x-rays, that all goes on your file. And at that point, once the medical information is received, the board will make a determination as to whether allow it or disallow it, or even allow a portion of it, whatever the case may be, but that's the process.
Okay, so, just the fact, though, that you have, organizations like the Hamilton District Injured Workers Group sort of implies to me that this always doesn't work smoothly.
No, and this is one of the reasons the Hamilton Injured Workers Group actually organized. There were a lot of workers who came forward and were asking, why is this happening to me? Why are my benefits either being denied or challenged? And we saw the legislation that was coming forward that was going to make it worse, and they needed help in one form or another, either with their claims. And one of the other things that our group did is what we call peer support, mm-hmm. where people can come together and talk to other injured workers, and to get them out of the shell that many, many workers fall into. They get, they'll hide at home or afraid to walk. If they need a cane, they're afraid to walk out on the street with a cane or even without one, for fear of someone. And this actually happened. You had people calling the board and saying, my neighbor, he's on compensation. Yesterday he was using a cane, today he's not using a cane. And this triggers things. It's, the stigma that's attached behind everything. I always say, they question, if you can't see it, it's not there. If you see it, then it's there. That's the system that's been created over the years. Mm-hmm. It's the stigma that's attached. So if you don't see it, if you have a bad back injury or any injury that you can't see physically, it seems to raise bells, even when you have medical documentation to show that you are hurt. It could be a repetitive strain injury, it could be anything, but the stigma that's attached to it is just horrendous. We've heard it many times through journalists, on the radio, talking about compensation issues and saying, they were bringing up these stories. Mm-hmm. There was one that came out of Ottawa. I'll give you a classic example. There was a cartoon in the Ottawa Citizen, and it showed an injured worker being pushed. He was in a wheelchair, being pushed by one of their friends or family, and going in front of a priest. Mm-hmm. And the first thing, this was the caption that was in this cartoon. First thing he said is, don't touch me, I'm an injured worker. We went and challenged that. I took the caption out and I put a soldier in that wheelchair. Mm. That, because that's the way they were looking at it.
Yeah. Yeah, so, a loss of respect. And the people that I've encountered that are trying to do with workmen's compensation, they certainly don't lead a life of luxury, to say the least. In fact, they universally, I find they're really struggling financially. So, what kind of compensation do workers get when they're injured and unable to work for a while?
Well, it varies, Doug. The policies that are developed, what we're seeing currently today, people with permanent impairments. There are more people living in poverty. They're being driven into poverty. What does poverty mean? I'm not just talking about injured workers. What effect does that have on the family? Your children, your spouse. It has a huge impact. And in many cases, we see, marriages breaking up, homes being lost. They have to sell in order to survive. That's part of the thing that we see going on.
Yeah, so the other thing, I saw a little item on this. We have new labor legislation, and one of the things, which overall is a great measure, is increase in minimum wage. But somehow this seems to be adversely affecting injured workers.
It will. And I can tell you, we addressed this issue with the government. And we also addressed it with the compensation board. I should say, when we refer to it, it's not Workmen's Compensation Board anymore. It's Workplace and Safety and Insurance. That mm-hmm. was the change, and a significant change in 1997. That was a huge change. So when we address the issue, how are you going to implement this minimum wage? And we're not opposed. The minimum wage has to go up. There's no question. But how is the board going to implement that on the benefit levels? And all we got from the board, I know I talked to the CEO of the board. I said, what are you going to do? And we proposed alternatives, which they have done before, but they refused to do that. They're going to implement that. The only change is going to be, instead of doing it immediately, they're going to do it over 3 years. However, you know, when we question what's going on with the Workers' Compensation Board, we don't trust them. They're doing it already. They're not waiting 3 years.
Yeah. And now, I logically don't follow this. You would think that if the minimum wage is going up, the compensation would go up.
You'd think so. You would most certainly.
So how do they rationalize this?
Well, they have their policies, and one of the major ones, Doug, is the campaign that we have going right now. It's called Workers' Compensation is a Right. We want the system back to what it was, at least to some resemblance of fairness. It's not fair today anymore. One of the major provisions that we're asking the government and the board to address is this provision of deeming or determining, what they call determining. They thought they got rid of it, the name deeming, now they use the word determining. What that means is the board says, in their opinion, you have a job that you don't have. You are earning wages you don't have. So when you look at the minimum wage, just for an example, a person that was on minimum wage before the legislation came in, say earning $11 an hour, okay? If you were deemed as a minimum wage worker, even though they would say, well, you can get a job at 11 bucks an hour, your loss of earnings would be zero. Now that's been increased from $11 an hour to $14 an hour. Now they're not going to get anything, period.
Mm.
They're not going to get anything.
Well, that's amazing.
So, and you know, think about this. Students, part-time workers, you know, migrant workers, think about this. The students that are coming out of, you know, university or college, going on their first job, they're going to get a job that pays whatever it pays. But if they ever get hurt, guess what? They're going to run into some problems.
Yeah. Now, you were mentioning, like, I guess a sign of my age, I always still continue to think of workman's compensation, but it's not that way anymore. So in 97, that would have been the Harris Conservative government. They made major changes?
Yes, they did. That was the downfall, particularly on cost of living. So benefits today, if you're getting any benefits, unless you are 100% disabled or widow, you will not get any cost of living based on what the rate goes up. So, and it has a formula. It's called the Freeland formula. And it's based on the full value of, say, 2.5% increase in cost of living, minus 50%, plus minus 1. So when you do the calculation, that works out. You may be able to buy a cup of coffee, what you get on that cost of living, once a month.
Mm.
You may not.
Oh,
so
wow.
That was the first step. The second step down was, under the workers' compensation system, benefits were always first. Let's face it, you get hurt, you're off work, what's the first thing you rely on? Is your benefit.
So that you can put food on the table, provide for your family. By the name change to workplace safety insurance, benefits were the last thing on the agenda. Return to work was the first thing.
Yeah.
So you had to go through a bunch of things until you even got considered for entitlement to benefits.
Wow. You know, so that was all changed for the worse back in 97, but the current provincial government has been in power many, many years. What did they do with those changes that came in 97?
Well, quite frankly, nothing. I shouldn't say nothing. They've made it worse.
Oh, well.
It has been made worse.
Yeah.
There is no doubt in our mind.
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah. So, you know, this seems to be the pattern that the conservatives, pull back on benefits and then the liberals come in, but they keep the negative changes that have been made. So, some positive developments with the recent improvements to labor legislation, but they haven't dealt with the some of the most vulnerable people, the injured worker.
No, they have not. They have not. We don't see that. And even though you might get the public relations, the statements that come out of the either the government or the board, we question them. We question them to explain it. But they will not take part with us. We've made recommendations for change to make things better. They've just refused to do that. I just want to add a couple of things on some of the major changes, Doug. In 2010, when they hired David Marshall, it was clear that he was put in that position to do one thing, and that is to only address the financial stability of the system. That's all he was put in there to do. And that's when we saw these new policies that came in, such as strengthening on the determination and looking at deeming on pre-existing conditions. And also the issue that arose, I'm not sure how many people saw it, was that the board was not listening to the family physician diagnosis. They were sending it out to medical consultants, and that came to light when actually Dr. Steinagel, who worked at this university here, said, no, I'm not going to do it, was fired from her job as a result, and that went to the courts. And it's, as far as I know, it hasn't been resolved yet.
You'd think, like to think that the people in charge of the system would have the goal of making life better for the injured worker, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, they're telling you it is. But now we've taken a look at some numbers. You know, we've had a court case that went to the courts on mental stress. They took it as far as they could, but withdrew. And they introduced some legislation that we're still looking at how that's going to apply. The other part was that what we see is in the last 5 years, just going back 5 years, as to the amount of benefits that were paid out 5 years ago compared to today, it's been cut in half. So whatever benefits that we're paying, that's a savings of over $4 billion.
Well. Okay, you mentioned the province-wide campaign that's just started. Compensation is a right. I think that's a great idea because, the public has to learn about this. And the press, the corporate press, has done quite a miserable job. Most people, I think, are totally unaware. So can you tell us a little bit more about the province-wide campaign?
Well, what we've done as a provincial organization, the Ontario Network of Injured Workers, we decided to start this campaign last September. After 30 years of dealing with this, enough is enough. And we had to do something. So what we have done is we have met with a number of politicians, or MPPs, from all parties, from all three parties, to get their views and demanding change, not asking for what you're going to do. We want to know, we want in writing what you are going to do within the first 100 days or so that you're elected, whichever one is elected. So it's a question of going after all the MPPs. And I think public awareness, they have to have that public pressure. You know, everyone knows someone who has a friend or a family member. They can see what's going on with their neighbors, you know, losing their homes, losing their families. And we want to bring public awareness, not just to the general public, but we want to educate the children, our kids today, of what their rights are in the workplace and the dangers that are involved here, just to make them aware to do something, you know, stand up for themselves and demand to know what they're working with, you know, have a safe work environment.
Okay, great. Well, Carl, thanks so much for coming in today. I've learned a lot, we'll try to keep spreading the word, and I hope maybe we can do this periodically continue increasing the awareness of how we are not treating our injured workers with the respect that they really, really deserve. They're the ones that keep our country running. So thanks again, Carl. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with more programming just after this message.
Thank you for having us here.
Well, thank you, Carl.